Tonight's topic is the halachas of Chanukah. I do apologize. Last week I had announced a different topic, but had forgotten how close we were to Chanukah. And since Shurim and halachas of Chanukah go down in value after Chanukah is over, like an etrog after Sukkot, so I figured we're best off learning the halachas now. Next week we won't meet because it is Chanukah, and the week after I hope to do the topic that I had mentioned, Mukta toys, which does seem to come up. By way of introduction, you'll notice in the text of Al Hanisim, we say Al Hanisim on two Yomim Tovim, on Chanukah and on Purim. So on Purim, we recount the miracle. We say in the time of Mordechai and Esther, there was a threat from Haman and so on. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned things around. Vashevotelo gemulo barosho. Haman was paid back. He got his due, was thrown back in his face, so to speak. The Saluosovet Bonavalaik. And they hung him and his sons on a tree. That's the end of the tefillah. And then we go back, we continue with the Shemona Esrei, the benching. On Chanukah, we also describe the threat. We explain what happened. We describe the Jews' victory. It was a nace from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so they lit the candles. V'kavu Shemona Simei Chanukah Eilu L'chodus L'halal L'shimcha Gadol. We then say, and then they established the Yom Tov. So on Purim, there's no mention of the establishment of the Yom Tov. It just tells the story. Haman was hung, the threat was over, end of Al Hanisim. On Chanukah, we describe the miracle, but also make reference to the fact that they established the Yom Tov. This difference is, as we say, Omeris Darshuni. It requires explanation. There's some message being sent to us here, and maybe at the end we'll come back to see if we can figure out what makes for that difference between Purim and Chanukah. Chanukah is the latest Yom Tov that we have in terms of its institution, its establishment. We have Purim and Chanukah, both are post-Tanakh, well, post-Torah, I should say. But Chanukah, of course, is the latest. The Purim story takes place in the 70 years of Galus Bavel, in the 70 years of the exile between the two Batei Migdash, between the two temples, and Chanukah takes place in the middle of the Second Commonwealth, in the middle of the period of Bayit Sheni. Nevertheless, the Chassam Sofer says, in a couple of places in his responsa, that there is a mitzvah min ha-Torah to observe Chanukah. Seems like a striking thing to say. How can there be a mitzvah min ha-Torah to observe Chanukah? There's certainly no pasuk in the Torah that says you have to keep Chanukah. The story hadn't happened yet. Nevertheless, the Chassam Sofer, the great Rav Moshe Schreiber, says that there is a mitzvah, not specifically what you do, but to observe Chanukah in some form is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. The Gemara in Maseches Megillah tells us that the reason for the establishment of Purim, not Chanukah, but Purim, is because when the Jews were saved from Shibud to Geula, from enslavement in Egypt to freedom, when we were freed from Mitzrayim, when we crossed the Yam Suf, so they said Shira, they had to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Mimisa Lachayim Lo Kol Shekein, how much more so if we go from a threat of death to being saved? Jews in Egypt existed. It was a terrible existence, but the nation was not in the immediate danger of being annihilated, totally eliminated. And nevertheless, when we were freed from that, from the slavery, we had a mitzvah to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How much more so when the entire nation is at threat of being annihilated and we're freed from that, it is a kal v'chomer, the Gemara says, and a kal v'chomer is considered min ha-Torah. It's a Torah logic. And therefore, there's a mitzvah min ha-Torah. The Gemara seems to be saying that the Purim celebration is a mitzvah min ha-Torah. And the Chassam Sofer says the same would be true of Chanukah. There was a threat to the Jewish nation. We were saved therefrom. We derive from the concept of Pesach, of being freed from Egypt and having to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore. So the same is true of any future threat. So he says not necessarily to light candles or to say Hallel or any of the other things that we do, but some observance of Chanukah would actually be a Torah mitzvah, not a rabbinic, but a Torah mitzvah. If Chanukah passed by and I did not observe it in any way, I have failed to perform a mitzvah in HaTorah. If a person observes Chanukah and doesn't follow the halacha properly, he may have failed to do a mitzvah either rabbanan or rabbinic mitzvah, but he has fulfilled a mitzvah in HaTorah. So it could well be that our Jewish brethren who don't know the halacha specifically, but in some way do something to observe Chanukah, there is perhaps a key mitzvah. They are doing perhaps at least the right, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, according to the Chassam Sofer. The Netziv, the great Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the last Rosh Hashiva, make sure I don't stop talking, this goes off. late Rosh Yeshiva of the Volozhiner Yeshiva said that it's not true. He disagreed with the Chassam Sofer. He says the observance of a Yom Tov at the time of the freedom, at the time of the miracle, that's min HaTorah, that the Jews sang Shira al HaYam, when the sea split and they walked through and then the Egyptians came in and they were drowned, that's when there was a mitzvah min HaTorah to say Shira. When the Purim miracle happened, when the Hanukkah miracle happened, at that time there's a mitzvah min HaTorah. But to establish a Yom Tov in ensuing years is only a mitzvah min Darabanan, and therefore what we did today is only a mitzvah min Darabanan. Whether it's a mitzvah d'oraisa or mitzvah d'rabbanan, of course, it's one of the very important mitzvahs that we have, and we have to be careful to observe the Yom Tov of Chanukah, both in the spirit of the law and in the technicalities of the halacha as well. We have, of course, the famous kasha of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and he was maybe the first, but he, probably not the first, but he records the famous question, why is Chanukah observed for 8 days? If they found a jug of oil that would have lasted for 1 day, and it lasted 8, that's only 7 days of a miracle. 1 day natural, and 7 days of a miracle. So if we're commemorating the miracle, we should have Chanukah for 7 days, not for 8 days. There are literally volumes answering this question. There are Sfarim with 101 answers to the Beis Yosef's question. But that is the basic question. Why do we observe Chanukah for 8 days if the miracle is only 7? Some of the basic answers are, one is a miracle in the first place that they found that jug of oil that was sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. Alternatively, am I talking too fast? we're celebrating not only finding the jug of oil, but the Nitzacha, the military victory. Let's not forget, the jug of oil was more of a symbolic miracle. It showed us that the rest of what happened was supernatural. A military victory can be explained away in military terms. That little hint from the jug of oil teaches us, don't think that that military victory was any less miraculous than this. But certainly the primary miracle was the salvation on the battlefield. So we at least observe 1 day for the very nitzachon, for the victory, and the other 7 days are the miracle of the oil. Another answer is that actually a miracle did happen the first day. Because it's not that they lit the jug of oil and it all burned out, and then the next day, poof, there was more. But on the first day, only an eighth of the oil burned. And the second day, another eighth, and so on. So it was a miracle already on the first day. And if you get in the car and you drive from here to New York and you've only used up a 20th of a tank of gas, that would be a pretty great Hanukkah miracle. Which reminds me of how I started my drasha last year on Hanukkah. I said that last year when I got up to speak on Hanukkah, I had a short little drasha prepared and a miracle happened. It took me 8 times as long as it should have to say it. So I hope it won't happen tonight. But in fact, Rav Chaim Brisker, through his Lumbus, proves this last answer that I told you, that it wasn't that the jug burned out entirely, was consumed on the first day, and then miraculously there was more. He says, because miraculous oil is invalid. You can't use miraculous oil in the Beis HaMikdash. It has to be natural oil produced of natural, this-worldly olives. If you used up your oil and then, poof, there's more oil, that's invalid. If there's a hechsher that says this oil is not the product of a miracle, it has to have a seal on it. He says if it was Maisa Nisim, if it was miraculous oil, they would not have used it in the Beis HaMikdash. So it must be that the way it happened was a little bit burned out the first day and a little bit more, but not that oil was regenerated. The miracle must have been in the quantity that was consumed, but not in the existence of the oil, or they would not have used it. One of these for you. But there are many, many answers. These are some of the classic answers to the Beis Yosef's question. There's an interesting question that is posed, why we don't find mention of Chanukah in the Mishnah. I guess that's not true. We don't find explicit halacha. Chanukah is mentioned incidentally in the Mishnah. But there's no maseches or even part of a tractate that starts off, what are the halachas of Chanukah? If you study all of Mishnah, you'll never find, what are the halachas of Chanukah? It comes up incidentally in the Gemara, in the second chapter of Maseches Shabbos, which talks about Shabbos candlelighting, so it brings in Chanukah too. But in the Mishnah, in the earlier corpus of knowledge of Torah Shebaal Peh, we don't have the halachas of Chanukah mentioned at all. So there is an answer to this attributed to the Chassam Sofer. I don't believe the Chassam Sofer ever said it. I was once talking to one of my Rosh Yeshiva. He said to me, if the Chassam Sofer said that, I'll eat my hat. And if he eats his hat, I'll eat my hat, because that would really be something. It is a Sefer of Menhagim that attributes this answer to the Chassam Sofer, and that is that Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the great Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the redacted, the one who put together the Mishnah, was a descendant of David HaMelech. It's from the Davidic dynasty. And the Hashmonaim, despite the great service that they did for Klal Yisrael, nevertheless were criticized for having taken over the Malchus, the kingship of the Jewish people at that time. They were Kohanim, not from Shevet Yehuda. As a matter of fact, in Parshas Vayechi, there's a famous statement of the Ramban, on the Pasuk, Lo Yosur Shevet Mi Yehuda, that the kingship cannot leave the tribe of Yehuda. He says that the Hashmonaim were actually punished. He says, despite the fact that they were Chassidei Elyon, the most righteous people, and if not for them, Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. He says, nevertheless, because, and perhaps they had to do what they did, but it wasn't exactly the right thing for them to do, to take the Malchus, the kingship, when they were really Kohanim, which is a different role, and this was not the role designated for them. So therefore, actually, tragically, there are no descendants of the Hashmonaim alive. Pretty soon afterward, the family was eliminated, which is a frightening thought. But that's what the Ramban says. So the Vart that is attributed to the Chassam Sofer is that since Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was descended from David HaMelech, and he was upset at the Hashmonaim for having taken the kingship, so therefore he didn't put them into his he didn't put their holiday into the Mishnah. Right. Anyone who knows the Chassam Sofer's the nature of his writing and the messages that he sends, it seems very unlikely that he would put forth such a theory. In any event, that's what's attributed to the Chassam Sofer. Maybe we can come up with another answer at the end of this year. Okay, getting into a little bit the nature of the Simcha of Chanukah. So there's the famous comment of the Levush, one of the great poskim, who explains there's a difference between the nature of the celebration of Purim and that of Chanukah, and that is that the nature of our festivity reflects the nature of the danger from which we were saved. Purim, there was a threat of physical destruction. Mahashmid, Laragul, Abed, Haman wanted to wipe out the Jewish people. There was a threat of physical destruction, and we were saved therefrom, so we celebrate in a physical way. Mishta v'simcha, very joyous feasting, drinking, it's a very physical, less intellectual, sometimes very unintellectual type of celebration, depending on how much one has drunk. Chanukah, actually, in the very first chapter of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah tells us there is no mitzvah to eat, no mitzvah of se'uda. Believe it or not, we have a Yom Tov where there's no mitzvah to eat. That's why I had to come up with a lot of it. But there's no mitzvah per se of eating on Chanukah, although the Ramah says there's a custom that people have that we make some sort of a masiva, some sort of a se'uda. In order to turn it into a se'udas mitzvah, we make sure to sing songs of shiras v'tishbachos, praising Hashem, or we say divrei Torah. But the meal per se is not a mitzvah on Chanukah, and that's because on Chanukah, the threat was really an ideological, a ruchnius, a spiritual onslaught, an attack on Klal Yisrael. The physical threat was because that we were supposed to join the Greek culture. We were supposed to sacrifice Torah culture. So it was really more of an ideological war, and therefore the celebration is more of an intellectual b'halal of a hodah, praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, understanding the nature of the Yom Tov more so than physical celebration. This is the famous comment of the Levush. Are women obligated in the mitzvah of Chanukah? Yes, they are. Women are obligated in the mitzvah of Chanukah. Hope that's not disappointing. I don't think it is. Even though we usually have a principle we spoke about a few weeks ago of mitzvah sasesh as man grumma, the old time-bound mitzvah cop-out, usually we say that women are exempt from mitzvahs that are time-bound. However, the Gemara says, it says in regards to a number of mitzvahs, as hein hayu ba'osa hanes, they were also in the mitzvah. Two interpretations of what that means. One is simply the threat was everyone. Men, women, and children, so the celebration for being delivered, for being saved from that threat, is everyone. That's a simple understanding. Alternatively, some Rishonim say, no, afein hayu ba'osa hanes means much more than that. They, too, were in the miracle. Doesn't mean beneficiaries of the miracle. It means the leaders of the miracle. At the forefront of the miracle, we have the story of the daughter or granddaughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol and Yehudis, that she ultimately severed the head of the Greek general. She fed him cheese, she made him thirsty, which is why there's a minhag mentioned in Shulchan Aruch to eat cheese on Chanukah, and then she gave him wine, and he got tired, and he fell asleep. and she decapitated him, and his head was brought back and hung up, and they lost their oomph, and that helped us to win the war. So there's a woman at the forefront of the Nates, and the Chana v'Shiva Bana also comes in, but we do have history of women being at the head of in leadership position, the miracle and salvation of Chanukah. So Afin Hayu Ba'osa Anais doesn't just mean they received the benefit of the miracle, but actually caused the miracle, or were at the head of the miracle, and therefore women are obligated as well as men. Judith, Yehudis, right, that's right. It's interesting, we don't have Torah Shebiksav on Chanukah, right? Purim, which is a post-Torah Yom Tov, but we have Megillat Esther, which is part of Tisvei Kodesh, part of Tanakh. Chanukah, we don't have that. Chanukah is later, it's already after we no longer have Torah Nevi'im and Ksuvim, which is interesting. The Rambam, in the beginning of his Halachas of Chanukah, writes a brief account of the story. He says, this is what happened, it was during the Second Temple, and so on and so forth. Everybody asks, why does the Rambam tell us the story? The Rambam doesn't tell you in Hilchos Chametz and Matzah, he wants to tell you about Pesach, and the Jews were in Egypt, and there were 10 plagues. He doesn't tell you the story, he doesn't tell you the story for every other Yom Tov, he doesn't tell you even for Purim. Why is it that with regard to Chanukah, the Rambam writes out the story? So Acharonim explained, because if you look at the introduction to the Rambam's work, he says this is a work on the entire corpus, the entire halacha. And all you have to know at least the bottom line of all of Torah, you have to know Torah Shebiksav and my Sefer. Doesn't mean he was saying don't learn Gemara, don't learn anything else, but he means to know the bottom line of the entire Torah, learn Torah Shebiksav and my work. The problem is if I learn Torah Shebiksav and Ram, I don't know what happened on Chanukah. So I'll write, you know, the light candles, do this, what am I doing? So I have to tell you the story because we don't have a Megillah. Right, okay, by the art school. But the Rambam was not expecting you to do that, at least not in his day. So that's how they explain why the Rambam tells the story. Yeah.
When you were talking before about in Al-Rinsen, so it says to establish Purim in Megillah Esther, but it doesn't say we don't have.
That's a good answer. We need something from the unshakeness of Dolos, some authoritative. I mean, we have it in the Gemara, but we want it in a text of Tefillah. Purim, we don't need it. We're all going to hear Megillah Festa. It's the central thing on Purim. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that, but that's a good answer. We have to establish the establishment of Chanukah. We have to emphasize the establishment of Chanukah. Interesting. Could be. There's even a minhag on the subject of women being part of the miracle and therefore part of the Yom Tov. There is a minhag mentioned also in the first chapter of Shulchan Aruch that women do not do work while the candles are burning. The minhag mentioned by some poskim that women said we don't do work all of Chanukah, and the poskim, notably the male poskim, wrote that that's not a good minhag, and that's a minhag. There's no such minhag as that, but it does say that women have a minhag not to do work while the candles are burning. And what is work? So there are machmirim, or makilim, take it as you will, who say that it means any kind of work, any malach, although the generally accepted explanation of this minhag is it means either things that we don't do on Chol HaMoed, or it just means the work that we call malachas avoda. It's a toil. Cooking isn't included. If one wanted to make latkes as well, you know, that's not the same thing. It means things that are considered difficult, unpleasant work. Some people could say cooking is unpleasant, but it's what we call malachas avoda, something that's more of a bother. And the Pesach says it's really only for the shear that the candles have to be burning, which is a half an hour after dark, so it's not all that long. Usually we're hopefully celebrating somewhat anyway, so that it doesn't usually become such an issue. But I would say if somebody was going to put up a laundry, we shouldn't light the Hanukkah candles and not go run or tell her husband to do it. But that's better not. I'm sorry, Janet?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is that minute as well. How we should light candles. It says in the Gemara that really the mitzvah of Hanukkah is fulfilled. Every family just has to light one candle. Each night, just one candle. Ner ishu beiso. That is the basic fulfillment of the mitzvah of Hanukkah. Just one candle each night for each household. However, the Gemara says that we have two higher levels. In this mitzvah of Hanukkah, there's level two and even level three. Level two is mahadrin. Those who seek to beautify a mitzvah, do a mitzvah in a fuller way. That is that we light a candle for each member of the household. each night. If there are 10 people in the household, so 10 candles first night, 10 candles the second night, 10 candles the third night, and so on. Nobody does this. Then Mahadran, Min HaMahadran, the highest level is to be Mosif V'Holech. We follow the opinion of Basil that we go up from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and so on to 8. There is a major machlokus among the poskim, among the Rishonim. Does Mahadran, Min HaMahadran, does level 3 build on level 2? In other words, do you multiply 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5, times the number of people in the family, so that if you have 10 people in the household, the first night is 10, second night is 20, third night is 30, and so on? Or is it independent? Or it's two different practices. One is 10 candles each night. The other is, no, one menorah. 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, and so on. This actually is a distinction between Minhag Sfarad and Minhag Ashkenaz. And it's funny. The Ashkenazim do what the Sephardic Rishonim say, and the Sephardim do what the Ashkenazic Rishonim say. Why this is, I don't know, but that's the way it comes out. The Sephardim do like Tosfos, and the Ashkenazim do like the Rambam, which is backwards. But that's the way it is. So the practice of Ashkenazim is that we do both. So all the people in the family, or whoever is lighting in the family, adding on for each night, 2, then 3, then 4, so it would be 10, 20, 30, 40, up to 80, and so on. An explanation of what's at the core of this issue is, there are two explanations of why we go up. One is, two explanations given in the Gemara. One is, we want to demonstrate what night it is. What night are we experiencing now? The first, the second, the third. The other one, the Gemara says, is simply Malin Bakodesh. We like to go up in Kedusha, up in holiness. So according to the first explanation, you want it to be very clear. If I look in the window, I want to see what night it is. According to the second explanation, we just want to be going up. So the first night there's 10 candles, 20, 30, 80. There's 80 candles. I look in the window, I have no idea what night it is. It looks like a bonfire, but the point is that we have more candles tonight than we did the previous night and more than the night before, and that suffices. Some say that might be the reason for the for that machlokus. The truth is we try to separate each person having a separate menorah so we can see somewhat what night it is, but that notwithstanding, that might be at the core of this machlokus. It's important to bear in mind the concept of Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. The lighting is the mitzvah, which means that everything has to be properly set up when I light. If I light a wick that's in my oil and there's only enough oil there to last for 5 minutes, and then I add in more oil subsequently so it can last the proper amount of time, that's no good, because at the time that I lit the candle, I lit the oil, it wasn't fit to last the proper amount of time. If the menorah is in the wrong place, if I lit a menorah at the store, running home, running late, so I lit it on my way home, I lit it and then I ran in the door and put it down, that's no good. It has to be in the spot where it's supposed to be at the time when you light it. The same is true if it's too high or too low, if it's somewhere way up more than 20 amos from the floor, which I can't imagine would happen in our homes, but or if it's too low, so it's supposed to be in its proper place at the time when it's lit. That is the principle of Hadlaka Osa Mitzvah. In the time of the Gemara, the mitzvah was to put it at the door. And some people, and I still certainly, and even in the Golas, some people still do that. However, the Gemara says that B'sha'as HaSakana, in a time of danger, when the culture surrounding Klal Yisrael would not allow them to do that, it was dangerous to be seen openly observing a Jewish holiday, so then Manicho al Shulchano Vadayo. The Gemara says when it's dangerous to put it outside, he puts it on his table and that's good enough. He put it inside. I once heard from my Rebbe Rav Kamen Epstein, I heard it a long time ago, I think I'm getting the story straight, that he heard from somebody who heard firsthand the Piachechna Rebbe, the great Rebbe, one of the Goli Yisrael, who was Nebuch, he's in the Warsaw Ghetto, he was a great source of strength for Jews who were suffering terribly, that in the last year when they were in the ghetto there, people saw him light the Hanukkah candles, and he just was saying again and again, Manicho al Shulchano Vadayo. Manicho al Shulchano Vadayo. You put it on your table and that's good enough. You put it on your table and that's good enough. So my Rebbe wanted to say an explanation of perhaps what he meant, and he was saying it again and again, he was having some kavana. He meant something by reiterating this phrase from the Gemara time and again. So roughly what he said is that the menorah symbolizes the difference between Klal Yisrael and the other nations of the world. when it's a time of peace, so we put the menorah at the door. There's the outside world, and we have to go out, and we're part of that world, but the person feels that within his home, certain things are different. You put the menorah at the door. It's a symbolic of a mental difference. When you cross the threshold into the home, things are different, and we have to understand it that way. Bish'asa takana, when we're being afflicted by the umos, and this is being said by somebody who is in the middle of the Warsaw ghetto, we don't need that reminder. There's no threat of what's outside on the street penetrating into our homes. It's now it's just for us. I don't need to put anything, I don't need any barriers at the door. Now it's Manicha Shulchan Ovadaya. That's what the, perhaps what the Rebbe meant when he was saying that. Alternatively, I saw very interesting from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. You know, the halacha is if one does put it in the doorway, so we have the mezuzah on the right side, and the menorah is put opposite the mezuzah on the other side. Simple explanation, you should be surrounded by mitzvahs. Rav Shlomo Zalman explained that one of the main problems at the time of Hanukkah was the Mitzyavnim. Jews were influenced by Greek culture and bought into it and wanted to reject the Torah culture. And part of the approach of the Mitzyavnim was we'll retain some of our Torah culture in our own homes. But when we go out in the street, when we go out in common and in society, we shed that. We have to be, when in Rome, do like the Romans do, literally. So that was their mindset. So the truth is, what is the mezuzah? The mezuzah, the Gemara says, you're supposed to encounter when you come in. You put it on the right side as you go in. Mezuzah is something you encounter when you come into it, and you can see it from either side, but it's supposed to be on an entrance. If you have a door that's only an exit, you don't put on a mezuzah, really. Depends, but technically that would be the halacha. Mezuzah goes on an entrance. So that means when you enter the house, you encounter the mezuzah. The problem then was the Mesiavim had to realize when you exit the house, you also need a reminder. So the menorah goes on the other side. It's not only when you enter. When you walk out also, there has to be a reminder of Torah and mitzvah. So the mezuzah when you go in, and the menorah when you go out. The right side is always the chosher, the primary side. So the mezuzah is on your right when you go in, and the menorah on the right when you go out. A possible symbolism of the menorah. Generally, when we set up the candles, we put them in going from right to left, the six nights. So I do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then we light them. There are different minhagim. If you have a different minhag, you should follow it, but this is the most common. We light them going the other way. The newest candle is lit first. So 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the post can say it's best, since we have a principle of ein ma'aviran al ha-mitzvahs. One is not supposed to pass by a mitzvah. In the morning, it's relevant to men, I put my talus in front of my tefillin because I'm supposed to put on the talus first. If I encounter the tefillin bag first, then I'd really be supposed to put on the tefillin. As soon as you encounter a mitzvah, you're supposed to do it. You're not supposed to pass over it. Passover is a different story. But you're not supposed to pass over a mitzvah. So, therefore, if my menorah is here, or even over here, and I have to light this candle, so I take my shamash candle and I move it past all the other ones to light this one, so that's not so good. It's better if I stand off to the, well, it's on my right. I'm to the left of the menorah, so then when I reach out, the first candle that I would encounter anyway is the first one that I would light. So the best position for lighting the menorah is if it's off to your right, so you can encounter the candle that you're going to light first is the first one you would hit. You're not passing by the other candles. You shouldn't have to reach across and pass by the other candles. We move to the right because there's a concept in the Gemara called Pinos Sha'atapona Liyamin. Every time you turn, when you're moving in a direction, in the formal rituals anyway, we move rightward. Everybody's moving to the right, so that's a joke. So you start with the left and you move off to the right. Okay? Those are some of the halachas. What is the proper time for candle lighting? That's a difficult question. There's really two shitas in the Rishonim, either at Shkia, at sundown, or at Tetzach Kochavim, when it turns night. Most people light closer to Tetzach Kochavim. Some do it a few minutes earlier. Some will light about 15, 20 minutes after sundown, some like a half hour after sundown. In some way, it's all Tetzach Kochavim, whether it be 45 minutes, 50 minutes. But there are different shitas, and one should do what the family's usually done. But Tetzach Kochavim is the most common time. Often it's a moot point because the ideal time for candle lighting, sometimes ideal things are not reality. If somebody's coming home from work, and Hanukkah always falls out in the winter. It's not yet come to be in the summer, so if somebody's coming home from work later anyway, so you're not going to light until the family is assembled. So the ideal time is not going to be when people are lighting anyway, plus the people daven ma'ariv, so often they daven ma'ariv first, so often we're not able to light right away at the first moment possible. But if it would be, so then Moshe held to light about 15 minutes after Shkia and Kotla about half hour, and some people light at Sirta Kochavim, and Eretz Yisrael, the minute to do it closer to Shkia. The person is not home. So, okay, let me step back for a second. In regard to women and married women and single women lighting candles, so it's like this. The post can tell us, Ishto Kegufo. A husband and wife are like one entity. Therefore, if a man buys himself something, it's as if he bought his wife a gift. What? I'm getting myself in trouble here. I just want to see if you're awake. Ishto Kegufo, for some concepts in halacha, they're one entity. If the man lit or the wife lit, it's as if they both did it. So therefore, even if we light candles for every member of the household, many married women have the practice of not lighting. Because Ishto Kegufo, if the husband lit, so she doesn't have to light. Some do anyway, but that's technically the concept in halacha, Ishto Kegufo. Now, that would not apply to an unmarried woman, a single girl, so that would not apply. However, some have the minhag that single girls did not light. One of the explanations offered, this appears in the back of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, it's the Shulchan Aruch written by the Baal HaTanya, whose birthday was yesterday, 2 days ago actually, celebrated by Hasidim. In any event, it says in the back of his Shulchan Aruch, there's some quotations and other things, it says that the reason for this minhag was that since in many communities the mother wasn't lighting, so they felt it wouldn't look nice. If the girl, if the daughters were and the mother wasn't, it looked funny, so the daughters didn't either. Could be an explanation. Again, not everyone has this meaning, but for those who have the meaning that the single girls don't light, that might be an explanation. Alternatively, the Chassam Sofer is said to have explained that since it used to be they lit outside, and it was something of a get-together, you know, people had a house, and then there was a chutzner, and at the door of the chutzner, which is like a yard, the various chatzeres that opened to the same common area, and everybody would gather outside, so they felt it was a big spectacle outdoors, so maybe it wasn't sneezed. So the girls didn't light. There could be an explanation, too. And he says it remained that way even afterwards when people lit inside. These are possible theories as to that minhag, but again, there is a minhag that some have that the single girls don't light, some do. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein held that they should. A different minhag, and each person, each family will follow the minhag that they have. If a person is not home for candle lighting, so if there's a Baal HaBayis who's going to be home a little bit later, so the family should wait for him. The candle lighting should be done together. He's at work, he's coming home a little bit later, so they should delay and the light a little bit later. If it's going to be very late, then often a man can ask his wife to light. Well, if he's not going to be home at all, then certainly he can ask his wife to light for him, or if he's going to be home very, very late at night, so the family can light, she can light. Really, the mitzvah is on the household. So once the candles have been lit, the mitzvah has been fulfilled. It's mahadrin, it's nicer if everybody lights. So if he comes home later, they'll light then. If everyone is asleep when he comes home, he should wake somebody up. Because if everybody's asleep, we no longer have the persume nisa. We don't have the making public of the miracle. It's interesting, in the time of the Gemara, the point of lighting candles was for people outside. Afterwards, when Chazal said, Manicha Shulchan Avadaya, that we're lighting now for people indoors, and many posts say that even though nowadays, Baruch Hashem, it's not dangerous, nothing will happen if we lit outside, thank God we're not under any threat, but many say that the Takana remained the same, that nowadays we're lighting primarily for people inside, which is why many of us have the practice that we light inside, but by a window, so we accomplish sort of both, but the primary persume nisa is for us in Golis, according to many poskim, is really for the people indoors. So it doesn't matter so much whether people outside are still awake or not, it matters whether people in the house are. If he comes home and nobody's up, so there's no persume nisa. However, the poskim say if a person lives alone, so he is the b'nei bayis, he is the family, and then as long as he's up, that's sufficient to be persume nisa. If a person goes visiting, if I go to someone's house, in the later afternoon, or let's say I'm going over to someone's house for supper, but I'm going to be going home afterwards, so then I have to go back to my house to light candles. You can't just decide to light candles anywhere. Candles really belong in my home. And if I'm only visiting very temporarily, so this is not my home. I'm just going over to your house for dinner and then going back home, so I have to light it in my house. But if a person is traveling, moving in, not permanently, but for sometimes sleeping over, So then that becomes one's temporary residence, and that becomes the place where one would light candles. Yeah.
So if you're at a Baba party Sunday evening, and...
Thank you for reminding me. There's a Hanukkah party here at 6 p.m. Yeah.
It's called by it, just lighting there. But if you wait, if you'll be home at 12 o'clock at night, you should light in your own house.
The Baalbaic is lighting where?
If you're at somebody else's house, out of town, and you're not going to be home for a while, is it preferable to wait and light your own menorah at home or to light a menorah?
Have we been staying at that house previously?
Just came for the day.
Yeah, no, then probably at home.
To wait till you get home.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What do we do for Shabbos?
So for Shabbat, the halacha is that we can light after a time called Plag HaMincha, when necessary. Plag HaMincha is, I think we calculated, but let's say an hour and a quarter before, for this purpose, before sunset. So on Erev Shabbos, obviously we can't light after sundown on Shabbos, so we light earlier, but have to put in sufficient oil or have candles of sufficient length that they will last for a half hour past dark. So that's why they make these big candles, where people put in a little bit of extra oil, so that Friday night the candles should last longer. Yeah.
Supposedly, a whole lineup of people lighting tons of candles at the wedding. So, they just really.
I don't know. I've heard of this. It's interesting to me. I don't know. If it comes up. Yeah, I don't know what to do in that circumstance. Yeah, I'm not sure how that works. The tshuva is about where the Chasam Kala light is. They're really a limbo, but really one that I think would light before or after, ideally. But there might, maybe there's something to rely on for that. But technically speaking, The mitzvah of Chanukah candles is for the bayis, it's for the house. As a matter of fact, the fact that we light in shul is a totally different concept. A man who comes and lights in shul still has to light at home. There's a minhag to light in shul, and by the way, I should mention that one should ask the shaila before lighting candles with a bracha elsewhere. There is what to rely on, but if one is going to light candles at some kind of other social gathering, you should seek rabbinic advice. Not necessarily me, but before making a bracha thereupon, because it's, you know, we can't just make a bracha on anything we want. There has to be some halachic status to it. You know, if I wanted to demonstrate how to light candles right now, it's not Chanukah. I can't just get up and make a bracha. So in the house, it's certainly a mitzvah. In the shul, there's a minhag. There's a special way it's done. It's on the south wall. Some of the minhag in the shul that we place it very high. There are halachas to it, or at least minhagim to it. But elsewhere, whether or not it's actually a fulfillment of a mitzvah or just a nice thing, one has to look into. So to light in other places, if it comes up, one should ask a shayla, because it's not so simple. Yeah.
Also,
under
these pictures about not eating when you light,
technically, halacha is actually really when there's any mitzvah to be done, especially a mitzvah like this, that we're not supposed to eat a meal. You can eat a little bit, but it's not really supposed to have a meal once the time for the mitzvah has come. There might be certain ways around it, but generally, if it's just a little bit of time, if we can wait, kids certainly can eat, but if it's a little bit of time, so we'll wait. If it's going to be very late, then maybe one wants to light already, and he can light later, and then we... you can do that. If it's going to be very late, some feel anyway, if the Baalbaic is coming home very late, then really his wife can light, and then the mitzvah's been done, but he lights as an additional hidur mitzvah, but then there's no problem. That's how that is. Now,
if you're at a wedding.
Yeah.
Don't tell me, I can't eat.
No, sort of, I would think people would do it before. Additionally, if somebody from the B'nai Bayis is home, if somebody lit for the house, the mitzvah has really been fulfilled. Remember, the core mitzvah is really just to light one menorah or even one candle. Whatever else we do is a hidur mitzvah. In fact, the person talk about how am I allowed to make a bracha on something where the core mitzvah has already been fulfilled. One person, the Baal HaBayis, lit his menorah, the mitzvah's been done. Someone else lighting menorah is just to beautify the mitzvah, to do the mitzvah in a fuller way. How do you make a separate bruch on that? That's a whole discussion, but we do. But really, once if somebody has lit for the house, the mitzvah has really been done. In fact, the post can say, if a man is traveling, he's not coming home at all, or anybody's traveling for that matter, if somebody's traveling on business, and he asks his wife to light at home, and he's staying in a hotel, many posts can say if he lights there, he should light without a bracha, because we're not sure he really has to, since in his home, the mitzvah is being fulfilled. If a person is staying at someone else's home temporarily, sleeping over for a few days, something like that, so then the place to light is at that person's home. The problem is I'm not automatically included as a ben bayis. I'm not considered part of the family. I don't really live here. They don't support me. I don't normally eat from this kitchen. It's just a temporary visitation. So then in order to be considered, if either one lights his or her own menorah, or if I want to be yotze, if I want to fulfill the mitzvah with the lighting that's already happening in the home, then there's the concept of partnering by chipping in. You give a nickel to the Baal HaBayis, and you say, with this nickel, I'd like to purchase a share in the oil and the wicks that you're going to light. And he says, I'm taking this nickel with the intention of giving to you a share in the oil and the wicks that I'm going to use for Hanukkah candles. Now I'm like part of the family. See, everyone else is automatically part of the family because they live there, even if it's not a biological family member, but somebody who boards there, so normally eats from that home, is supported in that home, is considered a family member. But somebody who's just visiting temporarily is not automatically considered as such, and therefore has to do what's called mishtatik, the priti. The priti is pruta, which means sharing by giving something toward the candle lighting. That's just some of the minhagim that we have on Chanukah. We recite Haneros Halalu. After so the first night, we recite three brachos and then light the candle. All other nights, we recite the two on the mitzvah and Sha'at Tanitim Lavaseinu. Really, once one candle's been lit, one can already start to say Haneros Halalu, which is the song that we sing, which is supposed to have 36 words, which is the number of candles that we have throughout Chanukah. And then the piyut, the poem that we have, Ma'oz Tzur, which has become pretty universal. Actually, the Sfaradim don't seem Ma'oz Tzur, I don't think. It's really it's an Ashkenazic minhag, but it does date back from the time of the Rishonim. It's a piyut. We talk about the Geula, the redemption from Yavon, from that trouble, and then we branch off into really all of the sorrows that Klal Yisrael had and the geulas that we've had from them and hope for the future as well. Chanukah Gelt, that's a popular one. It's interesting that since part of the joy of Chanukah is that the Torah was saved, that the light of the Torah wasn't extinguished, there's a particular mitzvah to support Torah on Chanukah. The Shulchan Aruch, the Poskim mentioned that indigent Torah scholars would make a plea at that time and people would support them, particularly as a mitzvah to give tzedakah to Aniyei Talmidei Chachamim, poor Talmidei Chachamim on Chanukah, because there's a mitzvah to support Torah on Chanukah, because it's when the Torah was, so to speak, reaffirmed and saved. So Chanukah Gelt, the minhag of giving out money on Chanukah, I believe is really an extension of that. Oh, you learned something in school today, and it's good you give the kid a little bit of money. It's like an extension of supporting Torah with money. And now that the kids have so much money, it has nothing to do with it, so that's why they play dreidel, and they gamble their money away. That's probably what dreidel is. We also have the legend that that's how they protected themselves when the Yavanim banned Torah study, so they said that they were playing dreidel, and then they pulled out the Gemara when the officer left, which might be part of the reason as well. All of the poskim decry the practice that people sit around the whole Chanukah playing cards and dreidel and gambling and it becomes a casino that we certainly should not do, but Gedolei Yisrael were mocked to play dreidel. Some sofer supposedly had a silver dreidel. He would take probably a few seconds, but he would play dreidel a little bit on Chanukah, and it's the minhag Yisrael. There's all kinds of symbolism in the dreidel, and it's an appropriate thing. Lighting the candles in the basic necessities I was going to talk about, I mentioned already. So these are some of the halachos and minhagim of Chanukah. Any questions? Yeah.
You said that the basic halacha was to light one candle.
Right.
But the rest of it just makes it not beautiful.
Yeah,
so the menorah itself, the 8 or 9 branched menorah, is that like a modern thing?
No, it's all from the Gemara. The Gemara says that the core mitzvah, you have to realize that The Gemara talks about in a number of places a person who can't afford Shabbos candles or can't afford Hanukkah candles. We look at that as a hypothetical, theoretical, but it wasn't. It was not at all. As a matter of fact, just incidentally, I'll mention this discussion. Whenever we have a mitzvah to light candles, there's a discussion in modern poskim about electricity, electric lights, whether that would be a fulfillment of the mitzvah. Can I use an incandescent light bulb for Havdalah, which many poskim say yes. Reb Chaim Lozer Grudzinski used to specifically use, he would say the bracha of Bori Marei HaEish on an incandescent light bulb because he wanted to demonstrate this is fire, because there are people who were saying you could turn on a light on Shabbos, so to show that you can't, he would make a point of making a bracha on it that is considered fire. A question is asked with regard to Shabbos candles, where many poskim hold also that if there's no choice, not on a fluorescent, which is just gas, but on an incandescent bulb that has a filament, you could consider that Shabbos candles in hospitals and other places that you go plug in. Many poskim hold one could make a bracha on such a candle. However, when it comes to Hanukkah, many poskim hold for Hanukkah, it's not sufficient. For Hanukkah, you have to have the fuel there. You plug something in, maybe a battery would be different. When you plug in, the alternating current is coming out of from the generator. That's not equivalent to having your fuel, your oil, your wax there. It's interesting, there's a proof that with regard to Shabbos, it doesn't have to be so. The Gemara in Maseches Tainis tells us a story of the Hanina ben Dosa's daughter. She didn't have much money, and she mistakenly bought vinegar instead of oil. And she cried to her father, and he said, "What's the problem? Misha amar l'shemen v'yidlok, yamar l'chometz v'yidlok. The one who decreed that oil should be flammable, should burn, can say that vinegar will burn too." Poof, and burned. So some point out, did you see that she lit the vinegar? You see, you don't have to. You can make a bracha. You can light something that isn't. Not much of a proof that is, but doesn't have to be fit to burn. But with regard to Hanukkah, many say that that would not be a fulfillment of the mitzvah. A person is in some circumstance where all they have is an electric menorah, that we would do it, but we wouldn't say a bracha on it because we're certainly not certain that that is a fulfillment of the mitzvah. But in any event, the Gemara says the core obligation is one, if that's all that a person can afford, he's done the mitzvah. But much better is to do either the Mahadran or we do the Mahadran Min HaMahadran, which according to Ashkenazi custom is to have everyone light and to increase further number, whatever number night it is. By the way, I should mention the helper candle that we have really should be ideally on each menorah. The minhag is really, you only need one, but it should be on each menorah. That demonstrates that these candles are not for our use. Eilanu Rishus L'Shtamish B'Hem, as we say in the song, we're not supposed to use the Hanukkah candles. By the way, some say that the minhag of the women mentioned in Shulchan Aruch not to do malacha, not to do work when the candles are burning, is also to kind of remind us of that principle. If I'm doing work, so I use the light. If I'm sewing, not me, but if one is sewing, doing other work, so you have to be able to see what you're doing. But if you declare a moratorium, no work, that's a way to remember, don't use the light of the Hanukkah candles. We wouldn't go light something else from the candles either. You don't transfer from that, ignite something else. It's hukta la mitzvah. It's fire that's being used for a mitzvah. Yeah. Question? Yeah.
The question is, it possible to have too much oil and for it to burn too long? For example, it's still burning when you're leaving for work.
Mm-hmm. It's not a problem from a halachic standpoint, although I think we have to be careful. No, seriously, the Hatzal always puts out the notices before Hanukkah, to be very careful. The halacha really is, and I'm glad you brought it up, after the candles have burned for the proper shear, they burn a half hour past dark, they really can be blown out. Some poskim hold that if you're going to do that, you should state from the beginning that I'm only designating for the mitzvah the amount of wax or the amount of oil needed for the shear, for the proper amount of time, and beyond that, that's mine. That's not for the mitzvah. Some say you should state that explicitly. Some hold it's not necessary. But I would advise if a person is going to be going out later, unless you're very, very sure that it's safe, it's usually not a good idea. I mean, if it's in a safe place, I guess it's okay. But if it's near the window, near the curtains, whatever, then one can blow out the candles. If you don't have to, it's better not to, because there are posts going to say once it's lit there, it should remain and designated for the mitzvah, but there really is plenty to rely on if one has to blow out the candle, so after they've burned the proper amount of time, they can be extinguished. Yeah. Yeah. It's an issue. Whew. I don't know. I'm not sure what. What do you mean? Yeah.
I mean, I guess like a part of me feels like, okay, totally, you know, like the body, like how much you follow me, such influence from outside and now, but then. So then there is this guilt issue.
Yeah, no, Hanukkah guilt has its own source. And I don't know how much the presents are an adaptation of...
I mean, I actually heard somebody ask somebody, and they said that they had been told that when they were Hanukkah, that the Hanukkah presents really started at the time of the Imanim, that the Hasharim, but the people were trying to keep the Jewish children interested in Torah, and so they would shower them with presents and good things and guilt and other things like that.
The other holidays didn't coincide as much in Europe. You know, their holidays are not as close. I think there was more guilt giving than the Cabbage Patch doll. The question is also gets. I thought you meant because it gets expensive and they expect every day, and that's something else. But
but having lived in other countries, it does seem to be more prevalent. The gift.
Yeah.
Seems to be more prevalent in America.
Yeah.
Than
uh-huh. All right, so that could be.
Well, I was growing up, it was always money. But not anymore. I mean, it's now, I'm buying out the mall.
All right.
What good is shopping in America?
Yeah. It's funny, Rav Avraham Palm has written one of his sorum. Rav Palm Zatzal, it's recorded one of his sorum that he said that he doesn't understand that the most foolish thing a person could spend money on is toys. He said, kids play with anything. Why should we spend money on toys? I don't think that most people don't seem to paskin that way. But anyway, yeah, should be in good faith and within reason. Just to conclude with what we started, I mentioned at the outset that the Al-Hanisim, before we conclude, I'll talk about Al-Hanisim. Al-Hanisim, we say in benching and in Shemun Esrei. What do we add into Al-Hamichya for Hanukkah? Nothing. There's no insert for Hanukkah or Purim in Al-Hamichya or Al-Hagifin. The reason for this might be because we only add in things that could manifest themselves as brachos. Al-Hamichya is called Bracha Achas Me'ein Shalosh. One bracha that's an abridgment of three. Benching in the Torah is only three brachos. And this is one bracha that's an abridgment of three. The halacha is if you forgot to say Ritzeh on Shabbos or Yalav Yavo on Yom Tov, there's a bracha to recite. If you look in a good bench, it'll say if you forgot to say Ritzeh and you remembered right after you said Bonei Barachim of Yerushalayim Amen, you say this bracha. There's a bracha. Baruch Atah Hashem, Asher Nosam, Shabbosos, Amnucha, the Osu and Bris. Some story between two great Gedolim, so one remembered it by heart and one doesn't. I'm that Gedolim. There's a bracha that would take its place. So it's a tefillah that can exist as a bracha. So in a shortened bracha, which is an abridgment of brachos, this can appear. But Al-Hanisim is never a bracha. It's just an insert. It never manifests itself as a bracha, so it doesn't get recorded in Al-Hamichya. Alternatively, we add Al-Hanisim to Hodo'ah. To the Thanksgiving. We thank all this, although we thank Hashem for so many things. And then we add V'al Hanisim, V'al HaPorkon. It's just more, or invention. V'al HaKol. It's just for this, for that, and on the Hanukkah and Purim. And also for this, and we tell the story. When you abridge something, you shorten the list. So it gets abridged out. But on Shabbos and Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh, Ritzeh and Yalav Yavo is not just a more lengthy list. A different concept, so that has to be mentioned in even in the bridged bracha al-hamicha. We say Ritzeva Chitzena B'yom HaShabbos Hazeh, or we say Zachreinu L'Tov or Samcheinu B'yom Chag, fill in the blank Hazeh. That's because it has to be mentioned. But al-hanisim, which is just sort of, we're making a longer run-on sentence, v'al this, v'al that, is sort of just a more lengthy hoda'ah, so it becomes a bridged out. In any event, what I wanted to say is if you forget all Hanisim, you don't have to go back. There is, however, a harachaman at the end of benching. If a person is benching and forgot all Hanisim, there's a harachaman who yasa lanu nisim in a flos kasher osel al asena b'yom lohim azman hazeh, I think it's the nusuch. So if you forgot it, you just say that, but you never have to go back. It's not like some of the other tefillahs, but if you forgot something, then you have to repeat the tefillah. I don't know. I think that's only when there's an issa malacha. I think it's only when there's an issa malacha. Yes, I don't think of Hanukkah. I don't think so. They do say migdal. No, migdal. Yeah, migdal. I guess so. I don't know. But what I started with at the outset, why is it that the Al-Hanisim on Purim just ends by saying that Haman and his sons were hung and the threat was over? On Hanukkah, it ends, V'kavu shmona simei Chanukah elu l'hodos v'lahala l'shim chagol, and they established this yumpus. The end of the story is, and the yumpus was established, says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, because the threat on Chanukah was to decimate Torah, to eliminate Torah. One of the great signs that the Torah is alive and well is the ability to have yumpus, to establish yumpus. That was considered the primary role of the Kohanim, who represented Torah, to be able to establish a calendar, to have Yom Tov, to declare Yom Tov, and especially to initiate, innovate a Yom Tov, is the greatest sign of the viability, of the vibrance of Klal Yisrael, that Torah is alive and well. So therefore, he says, "V'kavu shmonis mechanika elu hodos al shem hagadol." It's not simply a statement of fact. That's a statement of victory. That is the victory. Purim, it was a physical threat. He wanted to kill us. He's hanging. Story's over. Then Ahapahu. He wanted this, he got it back. That's the end. But on Chanukah, they wanted to eliminate Torah, and they turned around, and the Kavu were able to not only to keep what we had, but to establish a new Yom Tov. That's the greatest turnabout. That's the greatest sign that the Torah is alive and well. And it seems to me that that could also be the answer to why we don't find Chanukah in the Mishnah. Torah Shebal Peh is passed on in a sort of amorphous tradition. Gemara is a run-on, there's no punctuation, and the truth is the greatest Torah Shebal Peh are things that aren't even recorded. It's assumed. Right? If it's something that you know very well, you don't have to write it down. Right? In the family, you don't write it down. We get up at this time in the morning, we do it, we brush our teeth. Does anybody have to write? Well, maybe do, but hopefully not. Things that you know, this is our routine, it's part of how we live, don't have to be recorded. When there's a risk of something being forgotten or overlooked, then you have to put it together, you have to organize it. Even the Sidur HaMishnah, organizing the Mishnah, Rabbeinu HaKadosh put it together because he had to have a Masorah to pass on. But in the generations prior, the teachings were passed on, and it was known, it was understood that the things that didn't have to be formulated in a particular text. Perhaps the greatest sign of Chanukah, of the Nitzachon, of the victory of Torah Shebal Peh, that the Masorah is being maintained, is that we don't even have to put it into Mishnah. It's so well known, we know Chanukah. Chanukah is mentioned incidentally in Baba Kama. What happens if something caught fire? It's mentioned incidentally, but we don't have to spell it out. What is Chanukah? Because that was known. That could be the answer why Rabbeinu HaKadosh, why Rabbi Yehuda Anasi didn't put it in, because the victory of Chanukah was that the Torah is alive and well in the minds and in the hearts of Klal Yisrael, and therefore does not even have to be recorded, perhaps. Okay, Rachman Yachar, Lanu, the Nisim and Eflos that we saw in those times. I wish everyone a Freilich and Chanukah, happy Chanukah. We're not going to meet next week. We'll be enjoying Chanukah, and in 2 weeks, the subject will be Muktzah Toi.